Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast with Andy Burcham.
She is among the most decorated athletes in Auburn University history. Ruthie Bolton played on three SEC championships and a pair of NCAA runner-up finishes. During her time on the Plains, the Lady Tigers were 199-13. After her college career, the McLean, Mississippi native played on two Olympic gold medal teams, including the 1996 Dream Team in Atlanta. She was the first player in Sacramento Monarchs history to have her jersey retired. When she retired from the WNBA, Bolton was number four on the all-time three-pointer list with over 2,000 points. Her story off the court is even more remarkable. While she was playing, Ruthie was battling domestic violence. Her triumphant story was the subject of the SEC story to feature Mighty Ruthie. She is in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame and has a place in Auburn's Tiger Trail. Ruthie Bolton is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast. So very glad to have Ruthie Bolton with us on the Talking Tigers podcast today. My first year of play-by-play with Auburn Women's Basketball was Ruthie's senior season at Auburn. Tigers finished that year as the national runner-up in Tacoma, Washington, and then what became just a magnificent career from an international standpoint, a professional standpoint, not only on the basketball court, but off the basketball court began at that time. So, Ruthie, so very happy to have you on the podcast today, and War Eagle.
War Eagle, oh yeah, definitely. War Eagle, big time, in bold letters, War Eagle.
Ruthie, if you would bring us up to date, I mean, after your playing days are over, tell us what you're doing now. What's Ruthie Bolton up to these days?
Well, where do I start? Oh, my goodness. I am, wow. Well, when I retired from basketball, I actually started, I started traveling. I started speaking a lot. I started doing a lot of motivation speaking, and which is wasn't something that I thought I would be doing, actually. And so I was starting to speak a lot. And then when I was finished speaking, people would be asking like, man, I wish you could have followed this up into like, do you have a book? I said, book? Me writing a book? I don't have enough content to write a book. And as I start to speak more and more, it's like, that's when I started. Then I got a book, Sharing My Story, The Ride of a Lifetime. I have that book. I coached a little bit at a Christian college and then a Christian high school. Then I've done a lot of stuff at U.S. Embassy. I've traveled overseas for like 10 years for U.S. Embassy. We would go and do, it was with Beyond the Borders program where out of Washington, where we go and we'll do clinics overseas in different countries. And then we'll also do some mentoring. I really enjoyed it. I did that for about 10 years. And my home was in Sacramento. I stayed in Sacramento up until the last couple of years, but I was in Sacramento. So I did a lot of things there. I continued to work for the Monarchs and the Kings organization in between my own, doing my own stuff. And then also my ministry, I created Mighty Aim High, that I do a lot of stuff with kids and youth and speak. So I would say most of it been really speaking and really just really using my platform to really just spread the message. And really, you know, I grew up in a home. My dad was a minister. And so I feel like everything I've done from basketball, you know, the Olympics, the World Championship, the Hall of Fame, street named after me, you know, star on the ground, all those things is for a season like now. And so I just recognized early on that my purpose was bigger than basketball. And I feel like that's why I was sort of fulfilling my walk in my ministries, my speaking. I did it for schools, churches, entities that needed me to share my story. So it's been really an amazing journey. And I'm just, and I know I love the game. I love basketball and I love everything. I love the process. I just fell in love with the process of getting better. And that's what I think. And I feel like in this aspect of my life now, I love what I do. I love the purpose. I love the purpose that God has called to my life. I love mentoring. I love reaching back and helping some young girl or even some young boy out and using my platform. To me, that, you know, to make a 3-point play, to score and get fouled, that's something that happens inside of you. And so I feel like I make a 3-point play every time I can impact a young girl, a young boy. In the last couple, 2 or 3 years, I have a brand, Be Bold, Be Mighty. You. And today I actually have on my shirt, Strong Looks Good on Me. And I usually have Bold Looks Good on Me, Courage Looks Good on Me. faith was good on me. And I'm very intentional about the message. And anytime I'll sign a picture, I always try to write a message. And crazy enough, I just got a message yesterday. I wrote back when I was in Gainesville, this young lady named Jenny, but she literally called me out the blue yesterday. And it's been 25 years. She said, you sent a picture to me and you wrote on it telling me you were proud of me. You told me I'm gonna do some amazing things. And she said, you don't know how that inspired me. She said that kept me, and when I went through my rough spots, that kept me going. And to me, Andy, that's the biggest three-point play when you can really create a space to really remind the next generation that they matter. And so for her to all these years, me not knowing the inspiration that she would look at this picture. So that's why when I don't give a picture to someone so they can look at me every day. You know, I want the message. I want to write a message on there because that it just might be that very moment you look up and say, you know, I needed to see that message saying keep smiling. I needed to see that message saying be bold, be mighty, be the best you today. I needed to see that message that says you are courageous. You are incredible. And so that's really in essence, in a nutshell, what I've been doing, you know, since I finished playing basketball. And I enjoy this as much as I enjoy playing the game because I feel like one day I knew the basketball would stop bouncing. What I've done and how my life has evolved and how my career evolved, I know without a doubt that there's something that the message is bigger than me. And I would tell the kids when I go speak at school, I've been to thousands and thousands of schools. And when I speak in front of the students, I always say first, I said, listen, I'm here for, you know, 30 minutes. I said, listen, I'm not here as your teacher, as your parent. I'm here as me sharing my story. And I said, if you think about me tomorrow, next week, or a month from now, if all you can remember is that I played basketball, I failed you this moment. Because this is not just a basketball story. It's a story about life, a story about resilience, faith over fear. And so that really, I want the message to precede me. It's not about going flashing my gold medals, which I do have somewhere over here. It's not about flashing the medals and trying to feel. No, I want, yes, it's an attention getter. Yeah, I you know, won gold medals. I have a Hall of Fame trophy, whatever. But it's about the message is bigger than the actual accolades. And so that's what's important to me is that every young girl, every young boy leave with something that they can equip themselves with. Because that's what my dad did for us. You know, I draw back on the things that my dad taught me about attitude, mindset, that life is 10% of what happens to you, but 90% how you respond to it. He had that quote on every door in the house. And at times I'm thinking like, why would you have the same quote? We can read it on one door. But he said, I don't want you to miss it. I wanted to get so embedded in your mind, in your heart, that you do more than just memorize it. I want to leave an imprint in your soul, in your mind. And you know what? And he did. Because I know, I look at situation, Andy, and I'm like, what can I control out of this situation? I do what I can in that circumstance. And then whatever I can't, I let go. So I really, and I share that message very strongly with the students and the athletes. Saying, hey, because sometimes we go through life blaming circumstances, blaming somebody else. We want to ease the way out. I love to look at myself, look at my adversity. You face your adversity, because guess what? Adversity going to make you bitter or make you better. I chose for it to make me better. So that's those kind of tools that I want to equip the next generation with, is about how do I not give my power away to people or to circumstances that I don't have to look like my circumstances, that I can rise above. And I've partnered with a lot of organizations that through the years, I do a lot of stuff at Rise Above. It's a Native organization about this young lady just made it through basketball, was her safe haven, and she made it. She rose above a lot of circumstances in her life that could have taken her out, but she rose above it through basketball, through sports. So I was just on a girls retreat in Idaho with them for that. But I just love to be a part of a team. I want any teammates that believe in winning, because there's more than one way you can win. So I'll partner with you if you really, really have a, you know, integrity, your heart's in it, and you really want to impact, whether it's young people, whether it's women. My thing is that I want to leave my footprints. And I'm not like a typical athlete that want to be all, you know, private. I want you to know where I've been. I want you to know where I'm at and where I'm going. Because like I said, for like, I have a message to share. And every opportunity I get to share, I'm going to share.
What came first, music in the Bolton family or athletics in the Bolton family?
I don't even know if I've ever been asked that question before, Andy. You know what? I want to say music. We started singing early. When we were born, you know how you spank a baby and the baby started crying? When they spanked us, we started singing. And if we didn't sing, we were left at the hospital because, you know, singing runs in the family. So we started doing both early, singing, and even without music, we learned how. That's why we still sing a lot of a cappella now, because sometimes we didn't have music. Everyone next year, you know, it wasn't going to be, well, we can't sing, we don't have a musician. Now, we were the musician, and our clapping hands with no music with the musician. But yeah, there was a lot of athletes too. And like I said, I was a serious tomboy. I didn't like being inside. I wanted to be outside, climbing the trees, jumping fences, and playing with the boys. And matter of fact, I wanted to play football, and I did play football when my parents wasn't, and when they were not at home. I loved that, being from a farm, living in Mississippi and McLean and on that farm, things that kids have to pay for now, for plyometric agility. You could pay $75-$80 for an hour of that. We did that right in our backyard. Jumping over water, jumping up stairs. I love the physical. And my son the same way now. I love to feel like something that challenges my muscles. And with push-ups, burpees, holding up on a tree and doing pull-ups, it creates something. But yeah, we definitely, and our family, it's like athleticism and music have been our sort of our anchors. Those are two things that pretty much run pretty easy in our family.
When did you have an idea? And I guess we could ask the same thing of Mayola, your sister, that basketball and athletics could be your avenue into college and open so many doors in your life.
And, you know, Mayola was a superstar, and she was highly decorated, highly recruited. You know, she, in high school, her senior year, she hit the winning shot. She was already highly recruited, but when she hit that winning shot, you know, she has such a nice, beautiful high shot, elevation on her shot, and she has such a long arm span and just her defense, and she had a complete package, you know. So when she chose to go to Auburn, you know, I was trying to follow in her footsteps. And, you know, we had a lot of coaches coming to the house, and I'm trying, she had bags of mail, and, you know, I wasn't highly recruited, you know. And so my story is that, you know, I was just trying to get in where I fit in. I'm like, wherever that is. And I talked to Coach Champ about it quite often. That experience that almost kept me from playing basketball really was the most impactful experience in my life, because that was a choice of, do I quit or do I stay? Do I walk away or do I lean in? Do I abort the process? And to me, it's the easy thing and the thing that makes the most sense sometimes. Hey, just to walk away is not meant to be, because it's not even really a comparison. It's like oranges and apples. It's like, you're so far from, why should you try to knock a door down when you know someone don't really want you, or how many more ways if they didn't call you and you called them? So my challenge at Auburn, I thank Auburn. When I told Coach Chen, when you told me that I probably wouldn't play in my senior year, I said, that really, you don't know how much that helped me. I said, don't shy away from that. Come after, he wrote the foreword to my book, The Ride of a Lifetime. He said, because I said, you know what, you saw what you saw. Even my dad said, don't be mad at what they think about you, what they see in you. They didn't see what they saw in your sister. It's okay. Everybody has the right to see what they see. He said, but it left. He said, that door might have closed, but that window is that they were on a scholarship. You got to show up. You got to really do work. You got to show them that I can do it. You got to exceed expectations. With my dad's help and his encouragement to get to Auburn, being able to soar, being able to find myself, being able to see me, being able to grow. It taught me a lot about myself. And so I say, Coach Hammond, I said, thank you, because you challenged me to dig deep. You challenged me to see really what was important to me. And so that really helped me. That gave me a pedigree as a player, a tenacity that said, you know what, I can't afford to take anything for granted. You have built a DNA in me of giving 100%, not quitting. There's no room for error. It's like, it is a now. And there's a saying, Andy, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But guess what? If you only got one basket, you put every egg you got. And so I was at the point where I had to put every egg I had in that basket. Because a lot of people said, why are you, what is that it? And I said, I think that experience created that it. And I'm thankful for it because it created this continuous, you know, I know someone explained, say, you know, I watch you play. This is what I thought about. When I watch you play, it was like you were trying out every possession. You were trying to get a position. I said, you know what? To me, that's what it was all about. And that's what I think followed me my whole career. And that's what kept me in the game. When I got to Auburn, I had a bad Jerry curl and a bad shot. I had two negatives, you know. When I look at it, I'm like, seriously? You gotta be kidding me, right? But those things, what kept me in the game were my fight and my tenacity and my grit and that DNA that had been, my dad had built in me saying, you do your best and pretty much let God do the rest. But also going to Auburn and they're just, you know, friends for life, Coach Ross and the whole staff, you know, we talk. And so the experience there really was just phenomenal. And matter of fact, I wish I could find an article when I went to South Alabama. Bolton moves out of Sister Shadow. South Alabama, I want to say it was my freshman year. And they said Bolton, I think I had 25 points, maybe like 8 boards, 5 steals. I don't know. It was one of those. It said Bolton moves out of Sister Shadow. I became me. And that, you know what? And that's not even really knowing how to play that. Like I didn't, we went to Final Four. I didn't know how to play basketball that well. You know, I just played with my heart and my grit, you know, came up short, but I'm just thankful for that foundation because had I not gone through that, would I have been, had it been easy for me, would I have had the grit and would I have maybe got complacent because it was hard and it was a high mountain to climb. It built this sense of urgency in me that I cannot shy away from, that when I'm in a space of competitiveness, competition, it ignites something inside of me saying, hey, you know what? It's game time.
Here's Auburn's record in Ruthie's 4 years at Auburn. 199-13, only 13 losses in your time at Auburn. 3 SEC championships, 4 consecutive NCAA tournament appearances, and 2 in the national championship game. Do you ever have a chance to reflect back on that era of Auburn women's basketball? Yeah.
When I think about 199 games and 13 losses, like my whole 4 years, that's really awesome. But I think about that. And when people read it, I'm like, seriously, that happened? You know, I guess I say with a bad Jerry curl, a bad shot, I was turnover prone. But I think, I know somebody broke my record now, but I had the leading assist for a while. And I said, and they were like, no, no way, you know, because I've never been the best ball handler. And matter of fact, when Coach Champion wanted me to become a point, I was like, oh my goodness, and he's serious. But I was just willing. I'm like, sometimes if I wanted to play, I had to be able to expand myself. It's like, okay, we'll do it for the sake of the team. But I do reflect back. We're on a group text messenger, me and the former teammates and Vicky Orr and Patty Ann and my sister, of course, Mayola, Linda Garby, and we all reminisce and Jocelyn, and it's just like, man. And some of the stuff we bring up, it's like, I can remember like it was just yesterday. And we're thankful. And we love Auburn, you know, and that's why we, Coach Harris, we are happy that we want to be more involved. We want to be, if you're driving a car and you look in the rearview mirror too long, you're going to crash. We're not trying to say you got to take a look and we got to be the center of attention, but take a glance at history, a moment. Because you know what? Let them girls know they didn't just wake up and basketball was just there. You know, I even challenged the WNBA. You know, even the women that came before me, you got to, and it's responsibility, the leadership, the people in charge, because the kids don't know. It's just to make them aware, educate them. Well, hey, you know what? You should be thankful. Gratitude is in play. You didn't just wake up and it was here. I'm like, what we did in 96, and I know the Olympics, you know, we changed the whole trajectory of women's sports. It, without a doubt, there was so much at stake. So it would be nice, WNBA, every now and then to highlight a player here and there. This is part of our history. So I think that with Auburn, you know, we sit around, we're thinking like the next generation of girls, I want them to be successful. I'm thankful that my foundation was there. And every young lady come through Auburn, they don't have to be even with just basketball. Every young lady that fulfill in the sports world, I just like, I want you to just, and I want them to know my story. You know, I said, I was so close to not even playing basketball. I was so close. to not even plan. And if someone, even Coach Ham and I talked, if someone had shown him an hourglass and said, you know what, you really got to give this young lady a chance because one day she's going to be, you know, a world champion, a two-time Olympian, a Hall of Fame. She's going to, you know, you would have never, it would have been like, you know, what are you drinking? You know, wait, we don't see that. But to be able to say, you know what, watch me work. That's the mindset. So I want these young ladies to know this story that when you feel like quitting, when you feel like giving up, you have to know your why. When you know your why, you know your way. But if you lose your why, you lose your way. So understanding what your why is. And my why is that I want to play basketball no matter what. And that's what I stuck into. And that's what I fell in love with the process of doing that. And so when I've gotten a chance to talk to young ladies and I say, hey, you know what? This is an opportunity of a lifetime. There's a quote that we miss out on opportunity because they come in work clothes. Don't let this opportunity leave you because you're afraid of fear. Of failing, the fear that you may come up short. I said, if you fall flat on your face, get back up, fall flat on your face. Don't let fear camouflage the success that's in you.
Ruthie Bolton was the 1991 USA Basketball Female Athlete of the Year, as she mentioned, part of the 96 US Olympic team that at one point went 60-0. And I remember that 96 team, and you talked about how important that team was. Of course, that was the Olympics that was held in Atlanta. And that team toured all over the country leading up to that and came to Auburn in 1995, played an exhibition game against Auburn. And I came out the night before the game because you had an open practice. And I had a chance to talk to you and Jennifer Azy and others on that team. And we had seen what the dream team was like for the men. This was the dream team for women's basketball. And I remember that practice, and you led the team around the court at Beard Eves Coliseum. You were the leader of that team. But another thing that struck me about that, Ruthie, was how physically fit that team was as well. I mean, you guys looked different. You looked much stronger. And you're right about the importance of that team, not only for basketball in the United States and the world, but women's athletics was on display. And let's face it, there's a little bit of pressure on that team to win, wasn't there?
Hey, it was a little bit, and it was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But it was a pressure that we embraced. And Tara made sure every day, if you see anything other than gold, then you're in the wrong place. At any moment, you feel like, well, you know, I guess it'd be nice to just get a silver or even a bronze. It's, you know, the percentage of athletes getting to the Olympics just to get a medal is great. No. If you start thinking that way, we'll give you a one-way ticket home. We are thinking about goal, and that's it. We don't get goal, we fail. And that was the mentality we had. And I don't know if you know the story about it. She took us to the football field. We went to a football field. It was actually a year from the Olympics. And we drove out to the football field in Atlanta. She stood up, put us in the line, and she showed a video. She said, we're about to embark upon an amazing journey. And I want you to see, she showed us about a minute and a half of teams that had lost in the past. You know, the agony, the defeat, the disappointment, losing by 1 point, you know, losing by half a second, the disappointment. Then she showed us a minute and a half of videos of teams that had won, excitement, the joy. And she asked, which one you want to experience? And we said, of course, the win. She said, all right, well, if you say you want, you know, it doesn't matter, then this is your time to leave. So everybody stayed there. So we stood there. So Teresa Edwards had her gold medal. She put her gold medal around everybody's neck. We stood there. Everybody got a chance to put it on, take it off, put it on. So where we stood, she said, okay, you watch the video. You watch teams that lost, you watch teams that won. Okay. I asked if you want which one you want. You said you want to experience what the team that won experience. Okay. She said, so, all right, where you stand. And exactly a year from now, this arena will be built here. And where you stand is actually exactly where the gold medal podium will be. She had reached out to the engineers and saying exactly where would the podium be? Where would it be built standing at? That was very profound. It put us there like a year later before, you know. So we stood there and she played the national anthem on the screen. And so we just closed our eyes and listened to the national anthem. And it actually sort of gave us this vision of what it would be like a year from now. And it just put chill like, wow. So she said, when you feel like quitting, when you think I'm too hard, when you feel like, you know, you can just settle, she said, think about this moment. She said, it's not going to be easy. There's going to be moments you feel like quitting. If you feel like you want to just settle, she said, you let me know and we'll send you home. We're going to leave no room for error. And so that was a very profound thing that we did, because it kept us sharp and it kept us focused. And a lot of players say, hey, guys, we already saw ourselves in a gold medal. We already saw ourselves on the podium. So if you feel like quitting, you walk away. A lot of times girls want to quit. I don't know if you saw Dream On, but a lot of girls want to quit. I said, so you're going to let circumstances take that from you? We've already envisioned it. So I thought that was very profound for her to create that space and that visual, you know. And so Tara was serious. She said from the gate, I don't care about being your friends. When we done, you got to call me. You got to write. I'm trying to do what's best for the team. And bottom line, so this is my team. It's my way or the highway, pretty much. And that's what she did, and she stood by it.
One of the more poignant moments of the documentary that you spoke of was what you had been going through from a personal standpoint. You talk about overcoming adversity. It went far beyond just overcoming adversity on a basketball court for you. And one of the things that really touched me in that documentary, Ruthie, were the players that really didn't know, I guess, until later, of what you were going through at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that part of it was they wanted to be able to help you.
Yes.
At that time. I mean, with all the things that you were going through from a public standpoint, you're dealing with something away that was, it was incredibly tough for you. So how did you get through all of that, Ruthie? What was the key for you?
Well, you know, the key really, my teammates not even knowing that they helped me get through, because I was in a place where I had lost control over the personal aspect of my life. And I felt like I was sinking in a deep black hole. And I felt like my hands were tied behind my back and I was very confused. But when I would get to the basketball court, get to practice, that was a place where it was my safe haven. There was a place where I felt like I could soar. There was a place where I felt like I had control over. And I longed for that. I was seeking that space of that validation from my teammates without them knowing I was seeking that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I play so hard. You know, I took every day like it was the last day, because I wanted that. I wasn't getting it at home, so I wanted to get it from my teammates. And another thing that helped me was just my faith and trusting God. But it's sort of a hard thing too, because, you know, one thing about, you know, faith is, you know, you talk about forgiveness and you say, oh, you forgive it, and just, you know, no matter what happens, you forgive. And that's sort of a tough place, because that's what you're taught. And I think that's why I stay so long, because forgiveness. And so I feel like this is my bed. I got to sleep in it. And plus, I'm a warrior. I'm mighty. You know, I in my career, I was able to work. The harder I worked, the better the results. The harder I worked, the more I got. Then I'm like, okay, if I work harder at being a wife, I'll make it work. And that's what I held on to, that optimism every day. Like every day, it's a new day. It's a new day. And so I just really would just in stride, just really trusting God. Like, Lord, is this what you want me? I said, I'm trusting you to guide me, because, you know, I knew I couldn't do it by myself. I knew I could not endure that. And I wasn't really talking to a lot of people. I talked to my tutor, Janet. She was my tutor in my science classes. And I told her before I told anybody in my family. And I actually just saw her about 2 or 3 months ago in Florida. And we just reminisced. And so we just talked a lot about Auburn. And she just, you know, talked about me and some of the classes. She tutored me and we would go running and work out. But she bought me this book about, called The Other Woman, and that means the disease, alcohol's a disease. So she shared with me that it wasn't my fault, that it's just a disease. You can't try to fight. You just can't try to talk to them during that time. So she was huge in my life during that time. And because I was embarrassed about telling my family, I didn't, because even my teammates, I didn't want to know, because I could just hear them saying, like, you know, what do you do to deserve that? You know, why you do that? Because I felt like, me being young and naive, that I felt like they're going to look at me like, what do you do to make him do that to you? If you marry somebody, you love him, what do you do to make? So I was embarrassed. So I didn't really share it with them. So, and it was tough. It was, you know, but I just thought it was like, okay, let me just get through this day. And then it actually escalated a little bit, you know, even after the Olympics. But I'm just thankful that, you know, I was able to turn my pain to power. And that's my second book, From Pain to Power. And it just talked about my story and how I overcame it. And really just, and to any women that might be listening, you know, whether if you're going through it or know somebody else going through it, don't try to go through it by yourself. You got your own timing, your own level of tolerance, but you deserve more. And actually, in the back of my book, it has a 1-800 number you can call. You know, Domestic Violence Month is in October. And when I did my college tour and when I did the WNBA tour, you would be amazed at if there's someone there wasn't going through it, someone was crying on behalf of their sister, on behalf of their mom, because their mom, you know, went through it, their sister went through it. And so it was really just an eye-opener to me. And I didn't realize that much was going on. You know, the National Hotline Domestic Violence, they get about 3,500, 4,000 calls a day. And so, you know, you could call that number and you never have to tell them who you are. You can be anonymous until you're ready to reveal who you are. So I just encourage any young lady, you know, is not to go through this by yourself. And the number's in the back of my book. And you want to be able to have someone to walk with you through this journey and really realize that you deserve more and that you love yourself enough to rise above that and be okay. If that's what you've gone through, it's okay. And it's like, hey, because like I said, I go and share. I said, I went through it. I said, I was after my, I remember in Turkey, I was contemplating throwing my medals away because I felt like I didn't deserve it. Because, you know, if I couldn't, you know, why should I be blessed with that if I couldn't keep my marriage together? And it really tormented me for a while, you know, so I know what it feels like to be confused and to be just like, I don't understand what's going on and the feeling unworthy. And so I've been there, but thank God I've bounced out of it. And so I just encourage every young lady listening that, hey, you're not alone. You know, you got people that love you. You got people that want to support you and elevate you. And I'm sending you a virtual hug if you're out there listening. So, you know, we're in this together. We are a team and that we will get through this together.
That's so well put, Rupi. You talked about being where the gold medal stand was going to be 1 year before the Olympics. And you guys traveled all over the world in preparation for the Olympics there in Atlanta. So what was that moment like 1 year later where you're really on the gold medal stand? When all the pressure that came with that team to win the gold medal, and that gold medal is now around your neck, and the national anthem is being played. I mean, for those of us that will never know that experience, Ruthie, give us an idea of what it was like.
Standing on that podium and knowing that we had worked so hard to sacrifice being away from our family. And I forgot we had signed a contract. And so, because we knew we were going to be going with my family. You knew when we leave and go visit our family, if we get like a 5-day off, we still had a training regimen we had to go by. So at any time they felt like we weren't doing our job, we could get, you know, we could get kicked off the team. And so we had a major commitment, was a major sacrifice. And so we worked so hard every day in practice. We were training against the world best. Nicky McCray and I are best of friends, but there were times when we played the same position, we fight for more minutes. So we competed each other and every drill we did was win or lose. It was a competitive day in, day out. And so to me, after what we did all that time and then to be there in Atlanta. And I remember the night before, Tara Vanderveer asked me, she said, what do you think the key to us winning tomorrow night? And we were 59-0 at the time. And I said, teamwork, you know, we got to come out. We got to want it more than they want it. We got to rebound. We just got to play harder. She said, yes, all those things are good. But she said, you're the key. You're one of the keys. I said, me? She said, yeah. She said, listen, Magic Paulo is averaging about 29.5 points a game. She said, you got to get in Paulo's grill. She said, well, I've looked at enough tape video that when she struggled, the team struggled. When she thrived, the team thrived. So she said, you got to get in her grill. If she go to the bathroom, you go with her. And she said, I want you to get so close you can tell what toothpaste you used to brush your teeth with. I said, okay, all right. Okay, I can do that. And so it was pressure, Andy, but a pressure in a good way. I'm like, it was like trust. This coach said, I want you to defend her. And she trusted me. She said, if I didn't think you could do it, if I didn't think you were ready, I wouldn't ask of you. She said, I know you're ready. I've seen you, you know, through this whole year and how hungry you've been. and the consistency. And when you got off base a little bit, you watched videos and you just improved. I just saw how you kept growing and growing. And I mean, I was just like, wow, this coach believes in me. I mean, I woke up the next morning in my stance. That's all that was in my head, was on that gold medal stand. I said, we're going to stand right in the middle with the gold, and there's nobody going to come in our country. You think after all the sacrifice, you think you're going to come in our house and take this from us? Uh-uh, no way. It ain't going to happen. So I walked on the court, and I was so focused. I'm talking about the world is watching. You know, my family is watching. My Italian family was there. And it was just this excitement. And I looked at her, and I would tell the kids when I talked to teams, I said, what do you think my eyes show her? And they'd be guessing, guessing. I said, my eyes told her this is about to be the worst day of your life. I want you to regret you ever put shoes on to play basketball. And I'm going to make you doubt everything you ever knew about basketball today, because I'm going to be all over you. She scored one basket on me, and we beat them by 25 points. And I played every possession like it was the last possession. And so, and there was a picture that I got. It's a picture that I show. It's me trying to pull the ball away from two of the other players. And I think at this time, it was late in the game. We already up 20 or more. But I said, you will see the look on my face. I don't want them to have win, no possessions. To me, that accountability and that trust for that to lead the team defensively was just, it was just remarkable. And I tell the kids, I said, guess what? I said, she was using Colgate. Because I was all up in her. And to me, that was really, so if I ever had to name one basketball experience, that was it. And but just to be able to do what we did, not just for my family, my community, but for the country, and change the trajectory of women's basketball, I'm thankful to have been a player that have played a role in that process.
Another gold medal for Ruthie, an outstanding career with the Sacramento Monarchs. By the time she was done, she's among the top five ever in three-pointers made in WNBA history. And that wasn't really what you were known for at Auburn. You blossomed from an offensive standpoint after your college career. What was the key, Ruthie?
It was really Tara. You're right. I was more of a defender because I averaged shooting in Auburn and Auburn like, what, three or four times a game at that? Like, I wasn't. That's why it was a question if I could get to go overseas or not. It was tough to find me a job to go overseas after we lost in the Final Four, because it's like I wasn't a scoring guard. Okay, I had a pretty good tournament, but, you know, they was like, we don't know. So I literally had to walk on to Sweden. I could have gotten paid more washing cars here than I made when I went to Sweden, because I was having to prove myself. I said, hey, you know what? Hey, once again, if I got to prove myself, then that's what I'll do. You know, so I developed. Really, Tara, she said, I don't know. She said, you got the defense, so you're going to be in the game. She said, but we need you to knock down some shots. She said, I don't know what happened in college, whatever. She said, but we need you. If you're going to be in the game, we need you to make some shots. So she said, you got to follow my lead. And so I still had to shoot extra at the practice. Some practices I had to, like, maybe make 100 pull up to the right and then 100 pull up to the left. In another practice, I had to make 200 threes. And so I had repetition. And I would watch video and watch myself and look at how I was leaning, watching my follow through. And so it really was she said, if you follow my lead, you're going to be one of the best shooters in the country. Then once I started shooting the score, I'm like, oh, shoot, this feels good. I like this. And so my defense already intact. My defense, my work ethic already intact. So the offense was just a bonus. And when I went into that game in 96, I wasn't really caring about offense. I was worried about defense. But my offense, I think I ended up with 15, 16 points. Tara really was the key to really believing it and giving me confidence in my shot. And that helped me in WNBA. My defense was there too, solid. But I started shooting in the WNBA and being, I would say, a lot of people known for hitting threes, being, you know, I was sort of a streaky shooter. But that definitely evolved just from practice. So I was late in the game. So say I had started early, really focused on my shot, I think I would have been a better player offensively. I would have done even more since I already had the defense. You know what I'm saying? So I was a late bloomer.
By the time your WNBA career is over, you've been a two-time WNBA All-Star. You have two Olympic gold medals. You are the first, and I think still the only player in Sacramento Monarchs history to have your number retired. Then a member of the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I was fortunate enough to be there the night that you were inducted into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and hopefully the first of many Auburn players to go into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. When you look back on so many accolades, so many accomplishments in your career, Ruthie, what means the most?
I know it may be sound cliche. Meaning the most is really, you know, I have a 13 and a 10-year-old, my two angels, Christopher and Hope. And it's funny because they saw, Hopey saw the documentary, and she was like, Mommy. And she said, oh, it all makes sense now. Because she's heard me speak a lot. And so now she was sort of putting two and two together. She was like, wow, I'm proud of you, Mom. Like, I'm proud of you. And she, and then my son was like, Mom, you're a big deal. And I said, no, I'm not that big of a deal. But anyway, those are my pride and joy, really just being able to be a mom to them. And that's, you know, I said, when the goal was a lot easier than being a parent, you know, trying to do the right thing and trying to be the right mom. But I would say being impactful, you know, I have a brand, Be Bold, Be Mighty, Be You. And really things that I really want is really the impact off the court, to be honest. I would say outside of my kids, being able to inspire some young girl to put my medals around this young girl. And I was in Alabama when I did. Matter of fact, in Auburn at a school, about 30 minutes from Auburn, I remember just so vividly this girl, I walked through the crowd of about 300 elementary kids, and I saw tears in this girl's eyes. And she said, I said, are you crying? She said, I just been a fan of her since I was 6 years old. And she was 11. She said, I love you. You're so amazing. I was like, oh, you're so sweet. And I put the medals around her neck, and she just cried even more. And I'm just like, give me a hug. I said, you're going to make a grown woman cry. She just said that, oh, my life will never be the same. I'm just so inspired by you. That just like got to me. Those are the moments, really, is what I call gold medal moments. Those are the moments I live for. So giving them a glimpse, a synopsis of the story, and say, you can dream big. You cannot dream, but dream big. And just giving them hope and giving them something in their toolbox to say, hey, you know what? You matter. This is your time to shine. You belong here. COVID, in spite of circumstances, in spite of being cut from a team, you come back fighting. You know, I said, you get cut from a team and you really want it. I said, this is what you tell them in a nice way. Say, take a good look at me because I'm coming back. I said, the resilience, the bounce back is really what I want this story to leave behind, the legacy. Like the young lady that sent me that picture from 25 years ago, when she said, you know what? You really inspired me. You sent me that picture. You really encouraged me. And to me, that to me is what's important. Because one day the ball will stop bouncing. It has sort of stopped bouncing for me. But it's like, what legacy have you left? And so to me, this is really the stuff that stands out the most, is being able to use this as part of my platform to really impact the next generation and to let them know you can be bold, be mighty, be the best version of you. And I tell the kids, I said, hold your hands up. I said, there's nobody in the world. Have you set up fingerprints? And I remember this girl named Bella. I said, listen, Bella, all that anybody can ask you, be the best version of Bella. Even if you're triplet twins, nobody have your set of fingerprints. You were made in the image of God. You were made in his image to be the best version of you. That's all that anybody can ever ask. I do a lot of stuff for FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where I get a chance to openly speak about my faith. You know, but if I go to the school and, you know, I'm always, you know, my dad will say, you don't have to beat people because they have the Bible. But if they give me the open invitation to, I'm going to do it, because it's no secret that my faith and the foundation that my dad and mom gave me help me, propel me. They didn't just inspire me, uplift me. They gave me tools to use in my life. And so that's really what I want to pay it forward, to do it for the next generation.
You look like you could still play.
You know, I try to just stay in shape, and I, you know, and this is accountability to me. I know, you know, after having two kids, I'm, you know, I might not be in Olympic shape, but I'm trying to eat the best I can. And I try to, you know, get me some exercise in, and just be the best version of me. If I'm gonna tell this young girl, you be the best version of you. I want to be the best version of myself every day. How can I be the best version of Ruthie? I was the best version of myself when I got on that bus, when I didn't know if I would play when I went to Auburn. I was the best version of myself when I paid my own way to go to trials for the national team, which I ain't mentioned that. I paid my own way to go to trials and I didn't want to do it, but I was the best version of me when I did that. I was the best version of myself when I got this, tore my ACL, and it was in the paper saying I shouldn't try to come back because I'm old and rusty, because I'm 33 at the time, when I say, okay, you know what? Sit back and watch me. And so being the best version of me, and when I go and I share my story with them, to me, that's what I want them to see. I want them to think about the story, like not that just I played basketball, you know what? But she reminded me that I do matter. She reminded me that, you know what? I am somebody, that I have what it takes. No matter, it doesn't matter what someone say about me. It don't have to be true. Those are the things that I want to leave with them.
I hope you know how proud Auburn is of you and your life.
Thank you. I am. You know, I appreciate you, Andy. You've been, you know, you along with my retired Georgia or whatever my name, your name should be up there too, because you've been around for quite a while. And I appreciate you for being a part of our journey, being a part of the process, and being able to share a story so that the world, so that the Auburn fans can, you know what's going on with, you know, with athletes or former athletes. So no, we appreciate you. You committed to it. You sacrificed and you have a passion for it. And you knew what your why, and you've been living up and you've been doing your job. So to me, I think being a gold medal is a mentality. It's a pursuit of excellence. And that's what you portray. I want anybody that listening want to, you could actually send me a message on always on in my social media, Ruthie Bolton. You can send me something, say you watch this podcast, or you can go to anybody in school. I love going to schools and speak. And if you got any superintendents out there listening or principals, you can go to mightyruthieb.com and learn more about how to get some of my gear. Be bold, be mighty, be you. You can get stuff personalized. You can put War Eagle looks good on me. And so you can, that's a way you can stay in touch with me and let me know what your manifesto is. And just, I love learning about people, and I love staying connected with my fans or people that follow me. And so, hey, appreciate once again, Andy, you providing this space for me to share.
War Eagle.
War Eagle.
For Ruthie Bolton and the Talking Tigers podcast, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.